I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
No. Nope.
5-1.
No. Nope.
10-1.
You're after.
I'm gonna get you.
I don't know how, but I'm gonna get you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the sport of kings and sports gambling. A great show on tap today. Now, last week, I wanted to talk about handicapping, and I didn't get a chance. I will have that chance, hopefully, today. I want to talk a little bit about pace handicapping and why it's not as effective to use pace figures as you might think, even though I'm a pace handicapper. So we're going to talk a little bit about the right way to go about pace handicapping. Then in the sports betting segment, I will be joined by Kevin Rogers. We're going to discuss the Final Four in the NCAA basketball tournament. But before we get to all of that, there are a few things that you just need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
Alrighty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're gonna remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Well, we had a classic display of why it is important when you're handicapping horses, at least for a profit, to use as many objective measurements as you possibly can. You know, there's a bunch of people out there that talk about how they can see a horse. They can see it. And in fact, it reminded me how much this time of year, as much as I love it, the run-up to the Kentucky Derby itself, but how much this time of year can be just flat out annoying. I've seen it already on social media, a bunch of people. Hell, you know, let me teach you a thing or two. I've been doing, you know, and it's like everybody out there hits the Kentucky Derby every year. And it's the one time, of course, they concentrate, so they're really good. And you can learn something from them, what they see, that great eye that they have. Eyes deceive us. You know, we hear things like, that's an optical illusion. Well, no, it's really just a brain fart. It's you not being able to properly assess the data. The eyes can deceive us. And the talk about Zakonik was absurd. In fact, this is from a previous program where I talk about Zakonik's debut.
I read this on iSports Web. The headline, Horse Racing Zakonik, Zenyatta's son, runs big in racing debut. And I want to read you the last couple of sentences here. Sheriff said after the race that Zakonik, Sheriff's, by the way, is John Sheriff's, the trainer of both Zenyatta and Zakonik, will likely race next in a two-turn maiden special weight race.
Wise choice, Mr. Sheriff's. Very wise. That's exactly what this colt needs. In the meantime, stay tuned, readers, because at this point, the sky is the limit for this colt. This is why this story belongs in the crazy news segment. Not only was this race not very fast, but the late speed ration. Okay, that's my measurement of late energy disbursement. And it's a bit unique from late pace figures. I will tell you that in advance. But here we're looking for the higher figures. The higher the figure, the better. Zakonik, a minus 22 LSR. Now, minus 15 is poor. In fact, in the Kentucky Derby since 1998, there's been one horse that won the Derby after recording a minus 15 LSR or worse. And that was Mind That Bird, who had recorded the best last race ESR coming into the Derby. And I've talked before about how important early speed is in the Kentucky Derby. When you don't do either, when you don't have a great ESR to offset a horrible LSR, there's no chance. Now, Zakonik, being a son of Zenyatta, is sure to get bet
next time. And he's definitely going to get bet going two turns because as this writer for iSportsWeb notes, the sky is the limit for this colt. He needs two turns. He was closing fast at 7 furlongs, so of course he'll close even faster going a route of ground. It's nonsense. I would be betting against this horse with all my might the next time he runs.
Zayconic came back on March 25th and finished 5th as the even odds favorite. Now, of course, that wasn't bad enough. There was all the talk after the race that the reason Zayconic finished 5th is because a bird flew in front of him and he dwelt at the start, meaning he didn't break with the field out of the gate. Here's the problem with that logic. Zayconic was out of the lead by 8 lengths at the first call. He was beaten by 14 and a quarter. So you see, my friends, he didn't gain any ground. In fact, he lost ground. So even if we acknowledge that the bird was solely responsible for Zayconic breaking poorly, we've got to burden ourselves with the fact that he lost ground throughout the race. It was not an impressive run because his first race wasn't an impressive run. He is literally getting the kind of action he is based solely on the fact that he is a son of the great Zenyatta. Now, there were some great races this past weekend. In fact, some really good races this coming weekend. So check out usracing.com for all of your racing needs. But last weekend, let's start with the Fairground Oaks, where a very familiar name finally got a victory.
As they come to the top of the stretch, a quarter to go in the Fairgrounds Oaks. 3/4, 1/12, and 3/5 seconds, it's Adore. Adore's in front of Land Over Sea, who's been fully stretched, coming down to the final furlong. Adore leads by a length and a half. Land Over Sea in a battling effort, and it's Land Over Sea charging late down Adore through this daunting Fairgrounds stretch. Land Over Sea finding more, and coming clear for John Velasquez. Land Over Sea it will be, 1/5. Dream Dance on the line for second from Adore. Then Northwest Dale, Venus Valentine stage play. Midnight on Oconee, and last home was Street Fancy in 8th.
Land Over Sea, of course, had finished behind Songbird 5 times before breaking through at Fairgrounds. And I saw an interesting discussion on my Facebook page about the Kentucky Oaks, because Land Over Sea is being pointed for that race. Of course, Songbird is as well. And one guy was talking about the fact that Land Over Sea would do a lot better in the Kentucky Oaks. And Margaret Ransom, who actually writes for U.S. Racing, was taking the opposite tack, saying, look, this horse has been beaten 5 times already. Well, I kind of see the guy's point, because we're going to talk about pace handicapping later. And I think it always behooves players to keep in mind that certain racetracks are different. Pace scenarios can absolutely have an effect as to how a race is run. Kentucky Derby being a great example. If it were just speed, if it were just talent, we would see some of the Bellamy Rhodes winning this race. We would see some of the brilliant horses that have raced in that affair over the years. Holy Bull coming to mind, winning more often. They don't, because the pace dynamics are different. So I actually looked at my database to kind of get some pace figures. Now, this was popularized by Tom Brohammer in his great work, Modern Pace Handicapping. And the idea is that you're looking at what kind of energy expenditure does it take at this track, distance, surface to win. And of course, that's going to vary by track. It's going to vary by surface. It's going to vary by distance. At Santa Anita, the typical route race produced a -7 ESR and a -6 LSR by the winner. Now, what do those figures mean? I explain this every show, so please bear with me. The ESR is my own measurement of early energy expenditure, and the lower the figure, the better. The LSR is a measurement of late energy expenditure, and the higher, the better. A -7 early, -6 late is pretty good. Obviously, it's a winning effort. At Churchill Downs, however, we see that the average ESR is about 2 lengths slower than at Santa Anita. The average LSR is about 4 lengths faster. And this jibes with the longtime historical trend at Churchill Downs, favoring horses that can close. Now, this does not mean that they're coming from way off the pace. In fact, that's not true at all. It does mean, however, that the horses have got something in the tank. They can run on late, whether it's a front runner or a closer. And this is where a lot of folks get pace handicapping wrong, because they look too much at styles. It's not about styles. In fact, what was the point I made about Zyconic? Why didn't I like Zyconic? I didn't like Zyconic because he was a closer that had lousy LSRs. You just cannot do that. If you're going to be a closer, you're already up against it in a lot of dirt races. William Curran, of course, calling early speed the universal bias. So you've got to be able to run on late. American Pharoah is a great example of this. One of my big fears with American Pharoah in last year's Kentucky Derby is that he had wired a bunch of races without really going that fast early. But ultimately, that's the kind of horse you want. You want a horse with a versatile running style. When Secretariat won the Kentucky Derby, he posted a +8 ESR. Now, mind you, when I say that you have to have early speed to win the Kentucky Derby, I always qualify that by saying you have to show the ability to show early foot. You don't necessarily have to do that in the Derby. Mind That Bird being a classic example. He came into the Kentucky Derby in 2008 with the best last race ESR. And it was a great figure. In fact, that figure was so good, I've talked about this before, I actually looked at replays of the Sunland Derby to see if it was right. I literally took it frame by frame. It didn't seem right to me. But what did Mind That Bird do in the Kentucky Derby? He came from dead last. So it's not about not showing speed in the Derby itself. It's about showing the ability to ration your speed, because it's really, to me, that's what thoroughbred ability is about. That's what class is about. It's the ability to ration your speed. The truly great ones can do this. Dr. Fager, as great as he was as a front-running type, he could come off the pace. In fact, when he set the world record for a mile, he battled. He came from off the pace wide, carrying a ton of weight, too, incidentally, and set the world record for a mile. So that ability to change, to adapt to circumstances, is the mark of a great horse. And it's often hard to tell whether a horse can do that. That's why typically in the Derby, especially if it's a favorite, I say the horse has to have proved it beforehand. Now, have I been wrong a lot of times? Absolutely. I was wrong with American Pharoah. In fact, I'm trying to think of the other favorite, Big Brown. Wrong with him as well. But my feeling is I'm not going to take a short price on a horse that's trying to do something it's never done before. I want it to prove that it can do that to me. And after American Pharoah went wide in the Kentucky Derby, the way he ran, that convinced me. And by the way, -6 ESR for American Pharoah in last year's Derby, a -14 in the Preakness Stakes, and he won that race easily. That, to me, stamped him as a great horse. When you can go that fast early and still win in a romp, you're real good. Now, going back to Secretary, he had a +8 in the Kentucky Derby, a +8 ESR, a 0 in the Preakness, and a -6 ESR in the Belmont Stakes. Now, -6 is not that fast, but for a mile and a half, that exceeds the Belmont Stakes par. And I've said before, you know, as much as people criticize jockeys, I can only imagine what somebody would say today if they saw a horse go out there trying for the Triple Crown, running the first half, battling in 46-1. And that's what Secretary did. Now, mind you, the track was very, very fast, so you got to take that into account. But still, that is a brutal pace. So that ability to adjust and to adapt to the pace, I think, is so incredibly important. And we saw that in the Louisiana Derby. Now, I talked about Gunrunner right after the Risen Star. A lot of people talking about Mo Tom and the trouble that he got into. And by golly, you know, that's a sure winner next time. And of course, he was the favorite in the Louisiana Derby. But I made the distinction between the kind of trouble that we see that is obvious and the pace. And it certainly played out in the Louisiana Derby. But here's what I said prior to the Louisiana Derby, right after Gunrunner won the Risen Star. I was impressed with Gunrunner. I like Gunrunner coming into this race. I like him coming out of this race. fact, Laura Pugh, who is a contributor now for U.S. Racing, brought up the fact that Gunrunner, in terms of his form cycle, has more room to move forward than Mo Tom, and I would agree with that. And then when you look at the pace figures, you know, it's not always about, well, who had the tough trip? Because nobody ever looks at pace. They always talk about the obvious things, you know, a horse checks. I think some of the worst trips are based on pace. All right, so in the Louisiana Derby, it went like this.
3/4 in 1:12 and 4/5 seconds. Gunrunner has Forge in front of Candy My Boy. Tom's ready. Mo Tom toward the inside. Mo Tom checked again. Mo Tom in tight quarters at the fence. On the outside, Forever Mo and Dazzling Gem. Mo Tom got stopped hard. It's Gunrunner. Gunrunner and Florent Giroux clear to the finish in the Louisiana Derby. Gunrunner wins going away. Tom's ready was second. Photo for third between Dazzling Gem and, oh, it was hard luck in New Orleans again for Mo Tom. Then Forever Mo, Candy My Boy, Greenpoint Crusader, Conquest Windy City, Uncle Walter, and Battery was the last one home.
Now, I've noted before just how poorly horses that earned a ESR, a positive ESR of plus one or greater, do in the Kentucky Derby. And Mo Tom, second race in a row, positive ESR, this time a plus five. And I got into a debate with a guy on Facebook about this after the race, and he said, well, if Mo Tom hadn't had trouble again, he would have won by daylight. First of all, this woulda, coulda, shoulda stuff, they don't pay you for it. Doesn't matter who coulda, shoulda, woulda. You're not going to get paid for it, so I find it to be such a tiresome argument. But beyond that, this is the problem when you bet horses that don't have tactical speed, that don't have that ability to adapt. They tend to get into trouble. You hear it all the time. Well, you know, this horse, remember about California Crow. Oh, he got an easy trip in the Derby. American Pharoah. Oh, he got an easy trip. Yeah, because he's got the speed to get an easy trip. We just talked about Secretariat. Secretariat came off the pace in the Kentucky Derby. He set the pace in both the Preakness and the Belmont. That's what good horses do. Affirmed, Spectacular Bid, go through the list. They all showed that ability. So when you talk about these horses, oh, he had a tough trip, he would have won. No, because he's probably going to have a tough trip again. I look at a horse like Mo Tom. It's not that he can't hit the board in the Kentucky Derby, but you're just flat out foolish if you're betting this horse to win. Apart from the fact that the Louisiana Derby hasn't produced much in the way of a Kentucky Derby contender in a while anyway. Well, they get some favorites in there, but a lot of them don't do very well. It's just, it's not likely based on the kind of trip that he's going to have. Right now, I don't even think he has the points, so he's probably going to have to find some way to get some more points here. And everything can change. Granted, you know, he can come in to his next race and show some speed and show me a new dimension. That's great. But you kind of have to show that beforehand. And Mo Tom has shown me very, very little. Gunrunner, on the other hand, has absolutely shown that adaptability. In the Risen Star, the ESR was a minus 12 for the pace setter, and that pace setter was Candy My Boy. In the Louisiana Derby, Candy My Boy was once again out on the engine, minus 5. ESR. So he went a lot slower. And you see that a lot, by the way, that change of pace from race to race. You actually see it in the Kentucky Derby and Preakness. That change of pace phenomenon. So looking for horses that contested fast paces in the Kentucky Derby, often a very good angle for the Preakness Stakes. Here we saw the change of pace in the Louisiana Derby. But we got the same winner, and we got the same winner because Gunrunner has got that tactical speed. And, of course, he came home a lot faster as well. There is a relationship, obviously, between late pace and early pace. Now, can Gunrunner go on and win the Kentucky Derby? I don't know. Frankly, this wasn't a great race. It did get a B grade, but it wasn't a great prep race. So we'll have to see. But I do like Gunrunner. I like what he's shown. Speaking of a horse in a prep that I don't like very much, let's check out the UAE Derby.
Polar River is now coming away from the fence. Pat is angling her between runners as they're in the straight with 350 metres left to go. You Change led from Lani. Vale Dori, Polar River's on the outside. The zip's not there yet. You Change in front with 200 metres left to go. Lani still second. Polar River's only battling on the outside, but she's coming now. Lani gets to You Change. Polar River's still three quarters of a length away. Lani in front. It's Japan's derby. Lani has beaten Polar River, You Change and Vale Dori. Then on the rocks, Lazam and Frank conversation.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I think of the UAE Derby. You know, it's just, it's mind-boggling that this is a Group 2 race to me. It got a D grade in terms of my prep grades, and really that's only because it's graded. If this race were ungraded, which it probably should be, this would be an F. And then you look at the pace figures, and it's just not good. The pace, this is the pace of the UAE Derby, a +2 ESR, meaning that every horse in this field earned a positive ESR, which I just mentioned is incredibly negative going into the Kentucky Derby, and Lonnie now has plans on going to the Derby. And he came from last. So his ESR is even worse. Of course, the LSR was great. It was a -2. But just not saying a whole lot. You know, one of these days, one of these horses from Dubai is going to win the Kentucky Derby. I just have got to think it's going to be a horse that's going to have some tactical speed. Granted, this is a racetrack that does not play to early speed. We saw that in the Dubai World Cup, which is coming up next, and what a race this was.
California Chrome out wide and loomed up. Mashore Wish in the center. Mumdahidge on the rail. They get away from Special Fighter. But California Chrome has gone into overdrive. He's two lengths in front. He's clear of Mumdahidge battling on. Then Mashore Wish, but it's California Chrome in front. It's Alchemy in Dubai. Chrome turns to gold.
You know, sometimes, and I understand being an announcer, you try to come up with that quippy line, you know, that quippy line, that's kind of redundant. Just, you're trying to come up with that great quip, that great line. Alchemy? Really? Come on now. Good call. Good call. I probably would have kept that line out of there, but what a great performance by California Chrome. This is a horse that just continues to get better. Very, very impressive run. And truly the leader in the division right now. And it just reminds me, I made a Facebook post about this, that it reminded me what it was like to be a fan, because I'm becoming a fan of this horse. And the reason I'm becoming a fan is because I've watched him now race since he was 3. It's great to see the progression. He did it so easily in both of his races in Dubai. You're just seeing a horse come into his own. He clearly has got the inside track on Horse of the Year. It'll just be interesting whether he keeps running, where he runs, because I've heard some conflicting reports as to whether he's even going to go to the Breeders' Cup. I think you've got to do that.
Well, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, as always, this stuff in lieu of actual entertainment.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
I'm listening.
You just don't get it, do you? You don't.
Poor misguided freak.
Are you cracking wise? I ought to punch you in the nose, Hopscotch.
Perhaps you should deactivate your emotion chip for now.
Humor! I love it! Whee!
So I put this in the They Said It segment because I want to talk a little bit about a great book. James Quinn has written a ton of great books, and this might be the best of the lot. It's called The Best of Thoroughbred Handicapping. And in this book, he's got a summary of all the great handicapping methods throughout the years, all the great writings on handicapping, just some of the different thoughts. And there's a great chapter here called Pace Analysis Beats Pace Ratings. And I wanted to bring this up, even as a pace handicapper that, of course, comes up, creates my own pace ratings, because I've always said that you have to look at these things as a tool. It is not the be-all, end-all. There was a study done by a guy by the name of John Meyer. He was the publisher of the National Railbird Review. And he looked at a bunch of races, and he broke them down by segment to see if there was that magical segment that so many pace handicappers believe. Now, I've never taken that tact. I've said over and over again that my ESRs and my LSRs, and my LSRs are a little bit different than traditional late pace figures. So it really doesn't fit into a category. The early speed rations really do. It's just early speed. It's really first call that I'm looking at there. But the LSRs are a bit different. That being said, they are secondary, always have been, to speed figures in terms of predictive value. However, there's a difference between predictive value and profitability. This is confused all the time. People look at impact values or just percentages in general and forget the fact that we still have to make a profit. I mean, you can hit 40% winners, 50% winners, 60% winners, and still lose money. So that's not always the most important thing to look at, in my view. In fact, in my view, it's not. It's ROI, return on investment. However, Meyer didn't do that. He did just look at the predictive value. But it's very, very interesting. So I want to kind of give some of the stats here that he got. Now, I don't know if he adjusted the figures at all. I'm thinking he probably didn't. But it's not as egregious as it would seem on the surface because he looked at all of the different figures. So, you know, it'd be one thing if you're trying to come up with a pace figure, let's say, and you're not adjusting fractions and you're just looking at the top fraction and you're coming up with win percentages and ROIs and that kind of stuff. You know, there's probably a better way of doing that. You probably should adjust some of those fractions. Obviously, we were talking about Maidan race course earlier, the race course in Dubai. They time from the time the gate opens. A lot of tracks, there's a run-up. So, of course, it's not comparable if you're looking at just fractions. You're never going to go as fast at Maidan because you're going from a standing start. That's one of the reasons why you adjust figures in general. Anyway, looking at his study, in dirt sprints, the fastest horse from the start to the first call, 25% winners. Dirt miles, 21%. Dirt routes, 43%. Grass routes, 20%. Now, mind you, this was written a long time ago, so we don't have the all-weather tracks. Turf sprints were very, very rare, so they're not even referenced here. But if you look at those percentages, and then he's got one from the, let's see, the second call to the finish. Dirt sprints, 9% winners. 26% winners for dirt miles, 9% winners for dirt routes, 23% winners for grass routes. I don't think that surprises too many people. So keeping those figures in mind, and I know sometimes it's hard on an audio show to keep track of all this stuff, but listen to the start to finish percentages. For dirt sprints, 41% winners. Dirt miles, 32% winners. Dirt routes, 39% winners. Grass routes, 30% winners. Now, I think all those percentages are a little high based on other studies of speed figures that I've seen. But what it points out is that the individual segments are not as important as the overall. And Quinn makes that point that when you're pace handicapping, the idea is not to find, like I said, that magical figure. Some people will look at turn times, or Colonel E.R. Bradley had the famous saying that you look for a horse that can run the final quarter in 24 seconds or less. Now, that's a little bit different and a little bit better because he's giving you a standard. And I do think that's really, really important when you're looking at pace figures. With my own pace figures, horses with an LSR of zero or better greatly outperform their odds. It's not even close. If I were to look at the horse with the best last race LSR, irregardless of what it was, that's a different story. They don't outperform their odds. Or they might, but it's just by a small amount. So having those standards, I think, is important, and especially with pace handicapping. You're looking for the unusual. You're looking for the horses like American Pharoah that can run that minus 6 ESR and then come back and run a minus 14 ESR and win impressively. Minus 14 is a demanding pace. When you can win a classic route race with that kind of an ESR, you are a talent. That's what you're looking for with pace figures. Something that just stands out. But just saying that a horse is the fastest early or the fastest late really doesn't do a whole lot. Let's go back to the Louisiana Derby. Who was the fastest horse late? Well, we could argue that going into the race, it was Mo Tom. Maybe even coming out of the race, it was Mo Tom. That didn't make him the best horse in the Louisiana Derby because there wasn't much of a pace. And we've seen this over and over again. You get a race, especially nowadays, on all weather or turf, and there's no pace. So the fact that you have the fastest horse late doesn't necessarily matter that much. Now, I've argued that you need to let the pace figures guide you. For example, if you have a race with a bunch of great late closers and one front runner, that doesn't make the front runner an automatic play. And I know a lot of people, that's exactly what they're looking for. Oh, we got lone speed here. Again, we've got to make the distinction between pace figures and style. And at least with my pace figures, I'm looking at energy disbursement. So if you've got a horse that disperses most of its energy early in a field where everybody else disperses their energy late, what does that tell you? That tells you that the race is designed for horses that disperse their energy late. And the horse that disperses its energy early is going against the grain. And that doesn't make the horse a standout. In fact, in a lot of grass races, it would make the horse a throwout. Because what you need is an American Pharoah type. You need a horse that can ration its speed effectively. You need that same front runner that typically disperses its energy early to be able to ration that speed. Maybe still lead, because that is an advantage to be able to dictate the terms. But you can't go out there pell-mell. You've got to be able to ration your speed. That's the way I would look at pace figures. Can this horse effectively ration its speed? Can it adapt to certain circumstances? Or can it not? Talked about Zyconic. This is a horse that we know is going to come from off the pace. So when I see a horse like that with a minus 22 LSR, where a minus 15 is poor, I give that horse almost no shot. Because, yeah, it can close, but it can't close very fast. So that's the way I would view pace figures. They're just a factor.
Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sick, saucy.
When you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky,
you, me, or nobody. He's going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. So it's not 2 reps of water drinking. Usually we do 10 reps of everything. So do another rep of water drinking.
I'm now joined by Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. And Kevin, we have reached that point. Saturday, the final four teams in the big March Madness tournament square off. Are you surprised to see the teams that are still standing?
Syracuse, obviously, Derek, is the only one that people are really shocked about just because of their comeback against Virginia. I really don't look at them as any kind of Cinderella because of their seeding. They're obviously a very good team from an excellent conference. When Jim Boeheim was suspended for 9 games, that obviously took them back a little bit, but Syracuse has been a very good story in this tournament, but by no means are they a Cinderella. North Carolina is not really a shocker. Villanova, Kansas, you know, you kind of figured one of those two teams would come out of their region. The same thing with Oklahoma against Oregon, that'd probably be one of the two to come out of it. So even though you only have one top seed left, I think three of the four teams you really can't be majorly surprised about, and obviously Syracuse is a surprise. But, you know, with this tournament, the way it's gone and the way this whole season has gone, nothing should really surprise anybody because it was so wide open as opposed to last year with Kentucky.
Kevin, I figured as we got closer and closer to the final two teams matching up that the lines would be more efficient. And on your website at VegasInsider.com, there's a great chart. It goes back to 1984. And this is looking at the final two teams now, the championship game. But not surprisingly, favorites have won 15. Underdogs have won 15. Is it tougher to make money at this point when all the attention is on these teams? You know, there's no sleeper at this point in terms of, you know, a team that somebody hasn't considered because they've had now weeks to consider these teams.
Well, I equate it to like a Super Bowl. And you know this from, you know, when you handicap horse racing, that once you get to these big races or big championship games, now all the focus is on this one game, and everyone has kind of paid attention throughout the tournament, and they've developed their opinion. Same thing with the Super Bowl, where when you have Carolina and Denver, that a lot of people had developed that opinion of Carolina, thinking, all right, they beat Seattle, who was in the Super Bowl the last few years. They rolled Arizona, so they have to beat Denver, and I feel really good about that. And the Broncos got lucky against the Patriots, and you saw what happened where Denver, you know, surprised Carolina. That I look at it like this, that whatever we have Monday night out of the four teams getting down to two, that a lot of people will really pay attention, and I really don't think there's a lot of line value because now you're down to just one game, and everyone's talking about it, and everyone knows, in a sense, these teams. They're all big name, and like I mentioned with Syracuse, they're not a Cinderella. Syracuse is a name school, so we know about Syracuse and the kind of defense they play, the zone defense with Boeheim. And, you know, North Carolina can score. We know Villanova's very talented all around, and Oklahoma has Buddy Hield. So everybody has their own storyline in a sense. But the one thing I always loved about handicapping, you know, especially with college basketball, is you could find spots. And the same thing even, you know, in baseball or sports where there's just a lot of games on a daily basis. You could find those spots that no one's really looking for. It's hard to find a spot. We have one game to choose from, and that's the case on Monday night. So, you know, obviously we don't know what the line is yet because we don't know the teams, but I think that it is one of the harder games to handicap just because you hear so many different opinions about this game. Even though you don't have, like, the Super Bowl 2 weeks, you only have a day or so to think about it, it still is it's a very tough game to handicap in my estimation.
Kevin, a lot of times with sports betting in particular, I hear people talk about trends. And one trend that I noticed immediately was the against the spread record for Villanova and Oklahoma. Basically reversals, 6-4 for Villanova over their last 10, Oklahoma 3-7. But does that matter? You just don't have a lot of games there. Do you look at trends at this time, or is that something else that kind of goes out the window?
It has to go out the window just because, well, I'll give you the example of that Villanova-Oklahoma game. This just feels like a very rare occurrence, and I would have to look back, but just going off the top of my head, we've seen rematches before in the postseason or in the Final Four. Syracuse and North Carolina are playing for the third time, obviously, because they're in the same conference. But Villanova and Oklahoma is kind of an odd one. They played earlier this season at a neutral site in Hawaii, and Oklahoma destroyed them. Now they're playing at another neutral site. I don't think you see that often, two teams playing on two neutral sites during the season with absolutely no home court advantage. And when you talk about trends, that Oklahoma was pretty bad down the stretch against the spread. They obviously covered against Oregon and against Texas A&M in the last two rounds. And you say, you know, what does that really mean? Last year, Duke went 6-0 against the spread, winning the national championship. And we hadn't seen that before. So it just, you get to this point of the season, you have different factors. By playing new teams and also playing in a new venue here in Houston, where really it's going to be tough for a lot of these shooters playing in this big stadium. You have the backdrop or lack of backdrop behind the basket, elevated court, that there's just a lot of different factors that those trends, you kind of have to throw out the window. And that's where I think with trends, you know, regular season, they work. I think in the postseason, it's a little more difficult to trust them.
That certainly makes sense to me. So let's take a look at these two games. We've got Villanova, about a 1 to 2 point favorite. North Carolina, about a 9 point favorite against Syracuse. Do you see any value in these lines?
I like Syracuse more than the other game. I think the Villanova game is a major toss-up. When I look at Syracuse, they have lost twice to North Carolina this year. They always say it's tough to beat a team three times. And, you know, I get that sometimes the team that won the first two times may win the third time. But with Syracuse, they played North Carolina the first time at the Carrier Dome. And that was the first game that Jim Boeheim came back from his 9-game suspension. So it wasn't the easiest transition to make necessarily, where Syracuse wasn't playing well. And granted, North Carolina was a top 3 or 5 team in the country at that point. But, you know, I kind of throw that game out, and then North Carolina won a close game at home. I just think Syracuse can hang. I believe that, you know, this is a little bit different than we saw mid-majors in the past that got to the Final Four and then flamed out. Syracuse has the pedigree from playing in the ACC. They've just played an ACC opponent in Virginia, came back and beat them. Now they get another one that they have a book on. So, you know, really it's not a surprise to them necessarily playing this North Carolina team. They know what to expect. And I think that taking the points with Syracuse is probably, I don't want to say a safer bet, but I feel better about that. The early game, Villanova, Oklahoma, and that can go either way. It really can. And I know Oklahoma beat them earlier this year, but Villanova's played well. They just beat a team that I'm sure Oklahoma is happy they have to face in Kansas, who beat Oklahoma twice this year. But for those two teams, you have the best player in the country that's still around in Buddy Hield, and you have a very good Villanova team that's kind of well-rounded. So you kind of wonder, you know, what's going to work there? Is Buddy Hield going to beat them, or is the well-rounded Villanova team going to win? So that game is a tough one to call, but out of the two, I kind of like Syracuse with the points.
All right, Kevin, since we're not going to get a chance to talk before the national championship, I want you to take out your crystal ball now and tell me who you think is going to meet in that championship game and who you think is going to win. And again, you know, I understand with the time we've got and the things that can happen, this is not an easy thing to ask, but I'm asking it anyway. Who do you think is going to win the national championship?
Even though I said I like Syracuse in the points, I didn't say they were going to win. So I got to take North Carolina at least to beat Syracuse, but not cover. So I'll take North Carolina to advance to the national championship. I'll take against Villanova. And then you get to the national championship from there. And, I mean, I could see North Carolina winning it and beating Villanova to capture the national championship. Again, you know, Villanova's had a great run. They were a team that should have been a number one seed if they didn't lose the Big East tournament championship. They would have probably been a one seed instead of Virginia. So Villanova, obviously, you know, they've gotten to this point where they pulled off impressive wins. They had a nice win against Kansas in the Elite Eight, and I don't see why they couldn't beat Oklahoma. So I'm going to go with North Carolina and Villanova in the championship and take the Tar Heels to win it.
Very good. Well, of course, next week we'll start Major League Baseball. And I saw something amazing, Kevin. I just want you to chew on this until next week. The Chicago Cubs are the favorite to win the World Series. That just blew my mind. I hadn't looked at the future, so we'll talk about that next week. As always, it's a pleasure. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Derek.